Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is, I'm really excited about this, is former Channel 13 news reporter Phil Bailey. Phil has retired from WNYT. He has written a book, and he's here to talk about his new book. So, Phil, thank you for coming on Focus on Albany. How are you today?
Hi, Cynthia. Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure. I'm doing great. I'm excited about the approach of winter, and I'll be working on my skis today and getting out this weekend.
So, you've been a skier a long time?
I literally do not remember when I didn't ski. I was the fourth of four children, so I was too young to leave home. And my parents, I grew up in suburban Chicago. I grew up in Evanston, where Northwestern University is. So I lived a mile from the city. So our parents would get us out of bed when it was still very dark in the morning. And in that day, we'd drive north on two-lane roads to Wisconsin. And while out, it would be freezing, and if you remember, they didn't make clothing then that really kept you very warm. And we'd, so our parents had, I literally wore knickers. My mom had acquired knickers and some thick socks, so that's what we wore. And then she'd knit sweaters that were lovely, but the you could drive a motorcycle between the knit, it wasn't. And then we put on a windbreaker that really were purchased for sailing in July. And then they'd push us outside and say, go have fun. And I would freeze. I was such a little kid, and I was so cold. I don't know why I like this sport, but I just fell in love with it.
So you were raised in the Midwest.
Yes.
What brought you to Albany?
Well, as you can imagine, my work, journalism is a transient business, especially television journalism. So I started, I as soon as the last bell rang in high school, I moved to Colorado, and that's where I got my education, both at University of Denver and Colorado State University. So I started working in radio when I was still working toward my degree at Colorado State. And I loved news. I fell in love with news. I thought I was doing something with a purpose. And so I did radio for 6 years. And my first television job was in Grand Junction, Colorado, on the Western Slope, only, 10 to 15 miles from the Utah border. And then I got a nice offer to come to the East, which intrigued me because I hadn't lived east of, Michigan. And, so I took a job in Pennsylvania, and it was a very interesting time. It was a difficult time economically, and in Pennsylvania, the coal and the steel and the railroads, all those industries that Pennsylvania relied on kind of collapsed at once. Unemployment was unbelievable. I mean, there were towns that we'd go to where it was 50% unemployment. I remember...
Wow.
Pulling up in a town whose name escapes me, but we had to gas up, myself and my photographer. And this was the middle of summer, and I heard what sounded like gunshots up in the hills. So I said, what is that? And he goes, gunshots. And I thought for a moment, and I said, well, it's not even close to hunting season. And the guy just gave me a very serious look, and he said, they're trying to survive.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So it was an interesting time in Pennsylvania. I was there for 4 years, and I was intrigued by Mario Cuomo. I was doing a lot of political work. I was spending a lot of time in Washington, D.C., too, because Pennsylvania had a lot of important issues being considered in Washington. So I spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., plus I had covered some presidential races by then. When I was in Colorado, I covered – I worked radio in Denver also. And So I'd gotten to know Gary Hart before he was a U.S. Senator when he was first running. And Gary Hart was involved in that campaign, I want to say 1980. Does that sound right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And here was Mario Cuomo in New York, who I think was the most intriguing political figure in the country, regardless of your politics. But I mean, this guy was just very interesting. So I thought I'd come to Albany for a couple of years and for a cup of coffee and cover Mario Cuomo. And I like to tell people I was very much a political reporter then, and I like to tell people, well, all us geniuses, all us political pundits knew that the next president of the United States was either going to be Gary Hart or Mario Cuomo. So,
wow.
So they were happy to have me because I knew Gary Hart. I had covered Gary Hart. And, of course, you should remember that lesson the next time you hear a political pundit tell you who's going to be the next president.
Right.
Sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you get it wrong.
I live in downtown Albany. I live around the corner from the museum. And I remember my neighbors who have been here a while saying they remember Mario Cuomo jogging up the street past our apartment building. So I would have
liked
to see that.
You know what else he used to do? I lived on Madison Avenue for quite a while when I first moved here in 1986. Is that right? All right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 86. Okay, so anyway. So that means Hart was running for president later than 80. My apologies. Okay, but anyway, Mario Cuomo story. So I lived on Madison Avenue in one of the brownstones. And next to me was a brownstone that had been rehabilitated and was being used as sort of a halfway house, people in transition coming off of drug addiction, I believe. Or maybe out of prison. I just don't remember. Maybe out of prison. This was a while ago. Anyway, I used to stop and talk to the guys who were sitting on the stoop. And so one day they go, okay, so listen, because they knew I was in the news. They knew I was a television reporter. They say, listen to this. We're over there playing basketball. We live right across the street. Well, sort of just down the street from the basketball courts at in Washington Park. So they said, we're playing basketball. And this older guy comes up and says he wants to play. So we go, yeah, sure. So he comes in and then they differ. They say, yeah, he was pretty energetic. Yeah, he was pretty good. One guy said, well, he threw a lot of elbows. He was pretty rough. So this one guy sitting on the stoop says, well, yeah, he was throwing a lot of elbows. So I knocked him. I knocked him down. I knocked him on his back, you know, to teach him a lesson. So another guy said to him when they're in the game, says, you can't do that. And the guy goes, you know, the heck I can't. He's throwing elbows. I'm clearing out a little space for myself. And they just started laughing and they go, you can't do that. And he goes, I sure can. And they go, you can't. That's the governor of New York.
Right.
Anyway, Cuomo, and he said he looked at this guy and he goes, really? Are you? And the governor just nodded. Huh?
That was actually in the movie Balling in the Graveyard. Because somebody mentioned it.
Quite a bit. Maybe they found those guys. He'd go over there from time to time. He'd slip his security guard, which would drive their security people crazy. But he just liked some time, you know, to be himself.
So
nice guy. I enjoyed my talks. We had a lot of long talks. He liked to, Governor Cuomo, Mario Cuomo liked to, once the news conference was over, he'd have us into his executive chamber in a conference room. And once it was over, he'd stay and he'd like to engage us in conversation. We could talk about anything. We could talk about film. Sometimes he'd talk about his early days of playing baseball, his baseball career. As you know, he's a pretty good baseball player, and then he got beaned. He got hit in the head. And he said he sort of lost his eye for the ball. And he'd asked me about rugby because one of his sons was playing rugby in college at the time, and Mario knew I had played rugby, so he'd ask about that. You know, some of the most interesting times with him were sort of off the record. I mean, they were just sort of irrelevant. I mean, they were just conversations that people were having, nothing to do with state business.
So tell us a little bit about your book.
My book is called Murder on Skis. I'm really excited about it. It just started shipping. So orders, if you order it online now, they'll ship it to you. It's going to be on bookshelves, I am told, in time for Black Friday. It's called Murder on Skis. It's a fun story. It has adventure. It has mystery. It is a whodunit, and it has romance. It takes place in Montana, at a ski resort in Montana called Grizzly Mountain. And a body is discovered with a lot of questions to answer, and it is not the last body to be discovered. And a television journalist named J.C. Snow is dispatched up to Montana to cover the investigation.
So why'd you pick Montana?
You know, it's funny, but I literally came up with this idea and started writing Murder on Skis while I was waiting for sunrise in Montana at a ski area. I always get up early. I got up particularly early in Montana because there's 2 hours difference with New York, right? So my body was on a different clock. So I was fine with that. I didn't want to wake anybody up. So I'd walk out to the living room in this condo we were renting, and with a big window in front of me, and I'd wait for the sun to come up. And it just came to me because I knew at that time. Now, Cynthia, this was 22 years ago, at least. I've been writing this book for at least 22 years. I would, and at that time, there were no novels, no pieces of fiction that involved skiing. Now, I think Murder on Skis is a murder mystery that anyone will enjoy if they like murder mysteries. But if you like skiing and that feeling you get when you're in ski country, it's just one more reason to like it. So 22 years ago, I'm looking out that picture window at sunrise, and I just start writing. And I began to observe things in Montana. I visit Montana a lot. I have a brother back starting back in the 1970s, I was going to Colorado State, and my brother was going to Montana State in Bozeman, Montana. And so I'd go up and visit him. Always enjoyed my visits. We'd go skiing. We'd go running around in the snow, that sort of thing, looking for bear and, you know, looking for elk and looking for moose and just having fun. So Montana is more of a natural fit than you would think. So for 22 years, I've been writing this book, and I never thought it was ready. So I'd put it down, and then I'd pick it up at some point and write some more. But my job as a journalist, and especially when I became the morning anchor on News Channel 13, which was the last 15 years, I was at News Channel 13 for 32 years. So the last 15 years, I was the morning anchor. And joined by Sabrina Dami and Paul Cayano, and I were there. And then Sabrina joined us, which was a great addition. And so, you know, there was my hours then. I'd wake up at midnight and go into work, get there at 1 o'clock, work with our wonderful producer, Neil Shannon, and help, you know, put the show together and then write. I liked to write all my own stuff. I really like writing. Why is that? So, you know, and then I'd be at work till 9:30 or whatever, 10, and go home, get a little sleep, 3 to 4 hours, get back up, start preparing for the next day's show, have dinner with my wife, who is a saint, to put up with these hours. And then I would go back to sleep, try to get another 3 or 4 hours, and then I'd get up at midnight, go back to work. So as you can imagine, there wasn't any time to write a book. So it was put down for a long time, and it was something that bothered me. I liked the book. The people who I had showed it to, you know, some publishers, that sort of thing, liked it. And I just thought, I've got to get back to this. And besides, I really want to. So I've written this book. I think it finally is ready for readers. It's been six, seven, eight versions, you know, drafts. And so it's changed a lot. And I'm already two-thirds of the way through my next book.
Oh, you have another one coming out. That's great.
I do.
Good.
What's that one about?
Well, it's going to be a sequel. It's going to be another Murder on Skis mystery. And J.C. Snow will return.
Hmm.
So you really enjoy writing. So when you were when you were on Channel 13, did you have the liberty to write whatever you wanted to be broadcast, or were you under a tight rein?
No, no, no rein at all. One of the great things about television news, I believe, is that there are very few layers of editorial. Now, you have to be responsible, and you have to be fair. But, I mean, that's something that's bred into us. It's something we learn in college. It's something we take, you know, when we're studying journalism. It's something we take very serious. I don't think people, especially in this day and age, when there are a lot of accusations flying, I mean, you know, the best journalists are, you know, we're old school. And you're fair. You bend over backwards to be fair. And you just don't bring your bias into the room. I mean, everyone has a story, and everyone has a reason for doing what they do. You know, there's a great quote, actually, that is in my book. It's from Mary Shelley, the author of Frankenstein. And she says, no one wakes up, this paraphrasing, but no one does evil because they think it's evil. They just mistake it for their path to happiness. Journalists have to understand that everyone has a reason for what they do, and they think they're doing the right thing. Of course, the right thing is their definition of the right thing. But in television, you write what you write. Now, if you get in trouble, if there are reasons to believe you're not very accurate, then you're going to get oversight by, you know, perhaps the administration in the newsroom. You know what I mean? If you make mistakes, they'll keep an eye on you. And I have known of reporters who had to submit their copy to administrators before it was approved because they wanted to make sure they weren't making a mistake. But that wasn't the case for me. You get to write what you write. You better be fair. And I always took it as a badge of honor when I would do a story, say down at the state capitol, and I'd be approached by a Republican who would say, oh, well, you're a Democrat. And the same story, a Democrat would approach me and say, oh, well, you're a Republican. I said, great. If they're both angry at me, I must have done something right.
Two things that will always stand out in my mind. A couple of years ago, I had gone to a dinner honoring Chris Capistacci. That was wonderful. You worked with her, didn't you?
Yeah, Chris and I worked for the newsroom, News Channel 13, for quite a while. And then when she went to work for NBC, whereas, you know, we're an NBC affiliate in Albany, and she went down to NBC in New York City, we'd see each other because I was fortunate enough to cover a lot of big stories and national stories. Mm-hmm. And they would, and NBC would send Chris to cover those big national stories too. And so we'd get to see each other, and on occasion we'd get to have dinner, you know, together. The news photographer I'd be working with, be it Luce Rozowski or Mark Spilson or Paul Munson, they all knew Chris too. So we were all, I mean, we really had a delightful newsroom at News Channel 13. And we all got
I'm
along
sorry.
Well.
I remember reading that a big shot from MSNBC was in the Berkshires, and he tuned on the TV and he saw Chris doing the news, and that's how she became a big star on MSNBC.
That is how I understand it. And it is a cool story. I believe it to be factual. And that, you know, credit to him. I wish I could remember his name, but he was quite a talent hunter. He found he discovered a lot of good people for NBC. By the way, Gary Hart ran for president in 1984. I think I said 80 before.
Right.
1984.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He almost beat Walter Mondale in the very early primaries. I remember that very well. And the other thing, the other thing I remember, I'll never forget it. It was a dinner honoring Judy Sanders right before she died. Did you know Judy?
Yeah. Judy was a friend. Reporter. We're from different stations, but you know we all get along. I mean, I certainly get along with everyone and count, you know, John Gray and Lydia Kobita as good friends at Channel 10. And I mean, they used to work with me over at Channel 13. They were both at 13 with me, mm-hmm. if you remember. Ken Screven and Judy Sanders at Channel 6. I mean, and Liz Bishop, I've known them for a long time and, you know, yeah, I knew Judy well and talked with her on the phone maybe a week before she passed. So Dan Bazile is a buddy of mine. He's at Spectrum.
Right.
Yeah. So John McLaughlin, and all that time he was at 10, and Doug Myers. I mean, we were all – that's kind of the group. We were all, working as reporters for different channels when I got in town, when I got to Albany in 1986.
One of the things that I'll always remember, it was a couple of weeks before Judy died.
And
all her friends were there. John McLaughlin was there. There were many people there. And they all, came up to talk to her. She was elegantly
mm-hmm.
dressed. Her makeup was perfect. But when you walked
mm-hmm.
up to her, you could see that she was not well. But she talked to everybody. Everybody, oh my God! Everybody was smiling. It was wonderful. There was.
Yeah. She was. She was a tough reporter. She had a reputation as a tough reporter, but she was a very sweet person. And I know in the, as she anticipated the end being near, she was so moved by the attention and the well wishes, and everybody just wanted to express that they that they appreciated her and considered her a friend, and I know she appreciated that very much.
So we're getting off track here many times. So Russell, you have a couple of questions about skiing.
Well, my focus is more on skiing, but as a skier, you're right. Not many books, not many novels have skiing as a theme. So I imagine a lot of your own experiences are woven into the novel.
They are.
Go ahead.
Well, yes, they are. They say write what you know, and I know journalism, and I know skiing. Probably the two things that I'm best at, and I adore both. So yeah, there is, I mean, the protagonist in my story, J.C. Snow, is a journalist, but he's also an amateur ski racer, which is something I pursued for a long time. I was, you know, one of the lower rung racers at Colorado State. My senior year, I was a walk-on and raced for Colorado State. I got injured pretty early in the season, so I didn't last long, but it sort of triggered. Growing up in Chicago, I didn't even know there was such a thing as ski racing. So it triggered something. And so for 30 years in my adult life, I was a skier. We call it master's level skiing. So I'd enter about 25 races a year around here. There's a fantastic ski racing community here in the Capital Region. And whenever we raced at, you know, regionals or nationals, skiers here, my friends, you know, racers, we're very well represented. We do very well in the competition. So it shouldn't come as a big surprise to people who know me that J.C. Snow likes to do some ski racing on the side. And, yeah, I do touch base on, you know, skiing at various places. This time it's in Montana, but, I mean, I'll be back out in Montana and skiing at Big Sky and Bridger Bowl soon. So yeah, and then, you know, cross country skiing too. You know, one of the I had a very interesting run in with a bison once, and that's in the state. And it wasn't average run in with a bison by any means. He was certainly asserting his physical superiority, and I had to figure my way out of that. And so, yes, there are. Right? There are a number of real-life adventures included in this book. So I'm not...
Yeah, I saw your...
No.
I saw on your website that one of the criteria for your home was to be able to ski out the back door, cross-country ski out the back door or off your porch. And that's something I always enjoy doing, too.
Yeah. It, yep. It's, you know, it's a great undertaking. I will tell anyone, I'll tell any family, you know, it's something you can do until the day you die. You know, my uncle, who I'm named after, Philip Seneff, he was, actually he was a general in, Vietnam, ran helicopters for a while. Marvelous man, marvelous athlete. Sadly, confronted with Alzheimer's in the last years of his life. And they took him, he had learned how to ski late. I don't think he even started skiing until in his 60s, but he really enjoyed it. So when he had Alzheimer's, they took him out to a ski area, and he really wasn't very, aware of or understanding of the situation. But they buckled him into his boots, and they said, he looked at everyone there, and he goes, oh, I know how to do this, and went out and had a great day of skiing.
Yeah, physical memory.
Yeah.
That. I really love the little ski areas, too. The first one I ever skied at was Dutch Hill in Vermont. It's just a little place. Because some winters there isn't enough snow for cross country. It's really hard to find, and the only places you can find snow are where they're making it on a mountain. So that was my first experience at Dutch Hill, and it reminded me of your photo of Wilmot Mountain. It looked like that was back in the 60s from the equipment and the clothing.
In my lace-up boots. And again, I mean, I would get so cold. When I was young, my mom would bribe me into going outside and skiing by, she said, if you go out and ski, I'll get you a patch from this ski area, and you can put it on your windbreaker, that thin windbreaker that was really intended for sailing, not 0 degree weather. But I loved the idea of those patches. And I found it when I was going through our house, my parents' house, when they passed away. I found that windbreaker with the patches on it. It's like, oh my gosh. So I've got it downstairs, I know my wife wants to take the patches and put them on a sweater, get a sweater, which is fine, because that's cool, cool compliment to me and to my parents. And, yeah, I am so in agreement with you. I love the little areas, the older areas. I still really love seeking out somewhere that I've never skied before, and it can't be too small. I just love it. It's, you know, it's kind of grassroots of skiing. I think Dutch Hill was gone by the time I moved here, but I'll stop by a spot if I know there used to be a ski area there. And, you know, sometimes you can pick them out because the trails will still be cut. They'll be growing in, but and sometimes I'll even, you know, hike up them, which is a much steeper hike than people would think. But it's neat to find old places. And of course, there's a gentleman, and his name escapes me. I've got his book here somewhere in my den, sitting in my den. But he writes Lost Ski Areas of New England, and he has allowed that he includes New York. And it's a great book. Anybody who's interested in this sort of thing should pick it up. Just ask for, you know, Lost Ski Areas of New England or Lost Ski Areas of New York. And it's really neat, you know. And I have friends who their house was on the footprint of the lodge at Rock Candy Mountain up in, Melrose?
Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe Brunswick, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you like downhill?
What's that?
Do you like downhill or cross country?
Well, I like both, but I'm really an alpine skier, which is downhill. I'm an alpine skier first. I'll always take a day of alpine over cross country. I used to cross country a lot more, and it's funny. I'll get out now on cross country skis maybe once a year. And you would think it's just like riding a bicycle. You never forget, but that's not true. I'm kind of bad at it now. And I used to be pretty proficient at it. And so I don't know. Maybe I have to get some new skis or something. Maybe I'll blame the equipment. Can I really be that bad at something I used to be pretty good at?
Doesn't downhill take more skill?
Oh, that's a boy. That is subjective. You know, they both take a skill set, a certain skill set. You know, there was a day back in the early Olympics and that, where you had to do both to win your medal. You had to alpine ski and you had to cross country ski, and I think you had to jump. I think it was all for one medal. So it's different in that, you know, alpine skis, we have such great edges on there, and now the skis are so flexible that with a certain technique, you can really, you know, you can turn on a dime and carry a lot of speed and, you know, and really have that kind of fun. And cross-country skis, as you know, they're still not the easiest things to turn. You see the World Cup cross-country ski racers, and they still pick them up and put them down when they're going downhill on a turn. They're very good at it and very comfortable, especially on some of the challenging courses they race on, whereas we would probably – I'd probably be lying on the ground just telling them, oh, don't wait for me, go around. So they are different skill sets, but obviously similar.
I really, as we agree, those small ski areas are really fascinating with the local color and without the glitz and Oak Mountain or Royal, Hickory.
Yep.
West Mountain.
Hickory, I skied there. West Mountain, I have a season pass at West Mountain, 30 minutes from my door. I am all about more skiing and less driving. I've had my fun over Europe and across the country, but I just like to go skiing.
What was the coldest weather you ever skied in?
Oh, my. You know, there are days, there's like a day every year, isn't there, that you say, well, this has got to be the coldest day I've ever been in. Because, you know, that does come with skiing. It is natural. We were looking at an area last night, my wife and I, and some people had written in comments, you know, this is online, said, well, the chairlift closed because it was windy, and that's not very good. And we both agreed, well, that's skiing. It's an outdoor sport. Most of the time, that chairlift's going to be open, but sometimes you're going to really face some adverse conditions. So, I mean, we've certainly, I mean, we were up at Bolton Valley in Vermont only a couple of years ago, and my goodness, it was, I mean, the wind chill was well below zero because the wind was whipping. It was really cold anyway. You know, it was so cold. On our first run, we got to the top of the chair, and I take good care of our skis, my skis, because I'm an ex-racer, so I always make sure they're in immaculate shape, and so I do the same for my wife's skis. So they're always going to glide well and glide evenly. And so we get off the chairlift that day at Bolton Valley when it's just so cold, and we don't budge. You know, we push off the chairlift, as you do, right? And there's always a little bit of a slope, and we just didn't budge. And it was so cold that, you know, the snow, I guess, and I'm not a scientist, but I guess there was so much friction because it was so cold that it just wasn't going to go. And I go, well, it's going to take us all day to get down the mountain, you know, if we're going to have to pole all the way down the mountain. But happily, once we got over the lip, you know, and you get out of the wind, it actually turned out to be fantastic snow. And we had a great day of skiing there at Bolton Valley, and we were all alone because it was too cold for anybody else to be out there.
Yeah. Usually the lift is the coldest because you're up in the air and you're not moving and you're exposed to the wind.
Now, since Paul Kiano is a weatherman, did he ever go skiing with you?
Yes. Paul's a good athlete. He's a hockey player first. But he's a good skier. We used to ski together some, and then as kids got to an age, and you know how that is. There's an age when, you know, with two children who both of whom are, they're lovely kids, and both of whom are involved in sports, and so that's, you know, that's where a parent has to sort of spend their attention, turn their attention for a number of years. So, Paul's a good athlete, and we have skied together, which was fun. Yeah, Neil Estano's a marvelous skier. Neil Estano and I have skied together also, you know, the current meteorologist on the morning show at Channel 13. Neil's a fantastic skier.
Wow. So in our closing moments, Phil, give a plug for your book.
Well, it is a fun story. It has adventure. It has mystery. It is a whodunit. You can try to figure it out, but I'm not going to tell you very early on at all. It has romance. Murder on Skis is a murder mystery first. Anyone who likes murder mysteries should enjoy it. But if you're a skier and if you enjoy that great feeling when you're in ski country, then I think you'll really enjoy this book.
Terrific. Is it out now, and how could people get it?
If you order it online, they will ship it out today or tomorrow. The best way, you can go to Northshire Books. So that's northshire.com. That'll take you to a search engine, and then you just type in Murder on Skis, and it'll take you to that. And I'll give you a good tip. That's the best price you're going to get. That's why I mentioned it first. This
That's
book is published
Saratoga,
by Shire
right?
Press. What's
That's
that?
That's in Saratoga.
And Manchester.
They do. They have a store in Saratoga and in Manchester, Vermont. And Shire's Press, my publisher, is an arm of them. So you're going to get the best price. But you can also go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble. And you can go to, I think it's indiebooks.com, I think it's called. Oh, here it is. Wait a minute. Indiebound.org. They're also carrying it. So, and if it isn't in the bookstore you go into, just ask them to order it for you. And then maybe they'll get the hint and put, you know, five or six on the shelf. So we've been very happy with pre-orders. People are interested.
You think you'll be down to the little book house in Albany?
I love the book house, you know, certainly hope so. certainly hope so. Right now is a busy time of year, so you don't get many book signings. I've been told, such as by Northshire, they tell me, well, we want to do a book signing. But I guess they don't do a lot of that in December because they're so busy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
necessarily
room.
Right.
But yeah, I hope so. Believe me, if the book house invites me to do a book signing, I would love to do it.
Great. So we've been listening to Phil Bailey, a former reporter on WNYT. This is Focus on Albany. I have my friend Russell, Russell Ziemba. I'm Cynthia Pooler. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Phil, it has been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we talk again, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
You're very kind, Cynthia. Russell, thanks very much. I've had a lot of fun.
I hope we see you on the Forbes.
You bet. Let's try to do that.
Have a great day.
All right. Thank you very much, and you.